Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I am maybe the last time that I'll be recording out of my office here in San Francisco. I mean, no kidding. We don't know when we'll be allowed back in. We're under lockdown and, you know, this is getting a little bit too much into today's date. Who knows where things are going? And it is heavy, but I'm really appreciative that with my schedule being so tight today that Colin McIntosh said, yeah, I'm still going to be there. I'm going to be recording. It's tough times, but I will be here to tell you and your audience, Andrew, how we made this new company and made it so successful. Colin McIntosh is the founder of Sheets and Giggles. They sell sustainable eucalyptus lyocell sheets. I don't even know what lyocell is, but when I said eucalyptus, what is it?
I'll tell you all about it. It's basically, it's the newer version of cellulosic rayon, which if you're familiar with like bamboo viscose, that's the first generation of the process, turning plants into a fiber to turn into yarn. And then eucalyptus lyocell is the third and latest generation. So it's a little esoteric, but that's what I love about it is that it's like a newer kind of unknown fabric that I get to introduce to people.
I like that as I'm talking to you. You're in your bathrobe. I get the being in bed, but in the bathrobe.
I mean, so to be clear for the audience, there's other videos that we're shooting today that, I mean, I don't always wear this. It is very on brand. But this is actually the first thing I ever purchased when I had the idea about an S&G embroidered bathrobe. Clearly, I had lost my mind when I decided to found a pun-based bedding company.
You do have a really fun set of photos on your site. Interesting. You just seem to enjoy the fact that you've got this business, that you're in a business that sells sheets in a market where people have no way of differentiating sheets and no interest in paying attention to how one sheet is different from another or one brand is different from another. And you say, I'm going to go all in. I got this personality. I'm going to slap it on everything. I'm going to get in my bathrobe. I'm going to take photos. I'm going to get in bed. I'm going to take pictures from my site. I guess two of my friends in bed with me.
Yeah, Tony and Dan. Yeah, those are the guys on my left and right. So those photos actually, so me in bed with two other guys. So we can talk about why I did the bed sheets thing, but that photo specifically is our most successful photo. Three men in bed with avocado face masks on, drinking red wine. I don't know why our customers love it. Many of our customers are women, many men too. Don't know why they love it, but they do.
And it is eye-catching, and it's on your website, and every time I scroll past it, I have to stop to just take a look for some reason. Like, I'll always notice something else. Oh, they're drinking what looks like Merlot, and then I scroll past it. Next time it's, they've got something on their face.
It was a cab, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, speaking of fact-checking, before the interview started, I said, there's no way for me to fact-check your revenue. How can I tell that it's real? And then we went back and forth, and he said, Andrew, let me just do a screen share. Stop recording here, and I'll do a screen share. I'll show you the numbers. He showed me his dashboards over and over, and we got an understanding. He's doing well. I invited him here to talk about how he's doing it and how he got here, what happened with his previous business, and what is he going to do now in the future as the world is changing
comes
so fast.
Yeah, sure.
Let's hope not that. And we can do it thanks to two phenomenal sponsors. The first, if you have a business in mind and you want to get going with it, go to hostgator.com/mixergy. They'll help you put up a website to promote it. Or if you're just playing around, that's a great place to go and experience what it's like to create. And the second, it's called HostGator. Check them out at hostgator.com/mixergy. The second is TopTal. If you're hiring developers, go to toptal.com/mixergy. I'll talk about those later. First, Colin, what do you feel comfortable saying to my audience about the revenue? Where are you guys revenue-wise?
I feel comfortable saying that it is we're in our second 12-month period of sales. So we're in month 18 of sales of shipping. And this year in 2020 fiscal year, I feel confident saying that we'll do over $5 million in revenue.
Forward-looking.
That is forward-looking.
Highest month was doing how much? Would you say that?
Highest month was 400 grand. Yeah.
400 grand. Okay. Yeah, it's not typical, but that's where you are.
That was our recent high watermark. Yes.
Okay. And the site, by the way, the site that you showed me, what was the dashboard site that you were using?
It was awesome. It's called Shout Out to Glue. We just started using it. GLEW. It's really fantastic.
What is it?
It's so basically it plugs into your Amazon backend as well as to your Shopify backend.
Uh-huh.
And it pulls out all your data in ways that, you know, normally I'm just manipulating Google Sheets and Excel spreadsheets, basically figuring out top sellers, buying habits, what people are buying, demographics, LTVs. And my favorite thing is that for Amazon, it actually allows me to see my LTV and repeat buying habits as well, which is like an extremely, extremely that's usually pretty black box when it comes to Amazon. And so It's been great. They really fantastic onboarding. If you reach out to them, ask for Mark. He's the guy that onboarded me. He's really fantastic. I feel like I'm doing a glue ad, a Diggles ad, but that was the metric site that I was showing you. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's go back to the business you were in before. It's called Revelar.
Yeah, that was my prior company. I was not the CEO, but I was on the founding team and head of biz dev.
You're the guy who sat down and wrote out the business plan for it.
Yes. Yes. Back in 2013.
You're the guy. Did you present to Techstars, the accelerator?
That was actually my friend Jackie back in 2015. She was the founder and CEO. And she pretty, I wouldn't say, you know, single-handedly, but oftentimes I'm sure it felt like that for her. You know, basically did Kickstarter, one Denver Startup Week back in 2014, got the attention of Techstars, and then got into the 2015 Boulder class. And then that's, I basically was living in Seattle at the time. I was helping part-time with everything that she needed from that company's perspective. It was a wearable technology company, similar to Fitbit, except more in the emergency function. So if you pressed it, it would send out an emergency alert to your friends and family. And I drove down 20 hours from Seattle for Techstars 2015 to Boulder and on a 1 week's notice, and became part of the founding team at that company and did that for 2.5 years before I founded S&G.
Why weren't you considered a co-founder with co-founder equity and co-founder say in the company?
These are moot questions that you know, don't matter at this point anymore. But I would say for a number of reasons. One is because you know, it was Jackie's baby. She founded it to help fight sexual assault and violence, which was the cause that she was closest to. You know, she founded it for her little sister. Anybody will tell you, you know, the story that she would tell was very moving. And then I think also from a strategic reason, you know, I was 25 years old, had no consumer electronics experience. I was asked when I came in, do you want to be COO, CRO, CSO? And I basically said, look, just make me VP of biz dev. Let's hire a COO over me that has consumer electronics or consumer experience, retail experience. And that's exactly what we did. And so it was
I get the sense that you felt you weren't ready. You weren't right. Not to get too deep in your head, but you felt it was you playing a head game with yourself in that situation. Am I right?
Did we just meet? I feel like, I don't know. I'm saying, you know me, you know, you, I feel like you're hitting to the core of it pretty deeply, pretty quickly, which is, you know, I turned 25 the week we went into Techstars in 2015. I was, you know, a 24-year-old kid living in Seattle, working in B2B software. I had no idea about anything consumer electronics or anything like that. And the only thing I could promise Techstars and promise Jackie is that I was going to work 16 hours a day every day for the next 3 months for $1,600 a month. And that's what I did. And so that's how we started.
Did you have an agreement with her?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
You did?
Yeah, independent contractor agreement.
that was it. Meanwhile, you're the guy whose dad was a lawyer.
Yes, yeah.
You got to talk about how your dad made deals with you.
Oh, my God. So this is like slightly both... one of my favorite things about my childhood, and as I get older, one of the things that makes me realize how why I approach things the way that I do. So my dad was an attorney. He still is an attorney. He just merged his law firm 2 months ago. Really happy for him.
He merged it.
Yeah, he merged with a bigger law firm. Yeah, okay. So I'm really, really thrilled for him. Basically, when I was a kid, my sister and I had to negotiate our allowance. So my dad, what he would do is he'd actually sit down across the table from us every year on January 2nd. And he would basically say, all right, here are the chores that we need done for the next 12 months. It was an annual contract, and it would be pricing per chore. So it'd be 25 cents for the dishes, 50 cents for setting the table, 25 cents for mopping. Yard work was the big one. Yard work was like 75 cents. And it came out to a total for me, 325, my sister, 350. And my parents were pretty well off. And this is the funny thing about it is I had no idea, no concept-wise growing up that we were well off, as many privileged kids don't. And I worked my ass off for, you know, that $3.25. And if I didn't do a chore, he would Xerox a new copy and put it on the fridge every single week. And he would have to check off that we did the chore. And if we didn't do the chore, we didn't get paid for the chore that week. And so very early on, it taught me contract negotiations. it taught me, you know, you get paid for the work that you do, you know, and just one of those things where as the older you get, the more you realize the impact it had on yourself.
I've been now trying to think about how to raise my kids. And I wonder, do you think that this was helpful? Was it overbearing? It was. What part of it was helpful?
It was very helpful because I think that like when you're a kid, you really struggle with like the concept of money. And like what it is and what it means and like what it means to have a job. I mean, you're a child, right? Also, by the way, my dog Harvey has been under the sheets the whole time. He just emerged. Wow. Harvey, come on. No? Okay. So basically, I think it taught me the concept of money and like the concept of working for money. And the concept that like, I think a lot of my friends in school, they would get an allowance, and they would basically, just get it, you know, whether or not they did anything for it, $20 a week, $10 a week, whatever it was. And I basically had to work for every single quarter. And that was something that I think was really impactful for me.
And you weren't angry at it at the time? I mean,
I didn't get it at the time. I just thought that that was, you know, the way that my, you know, you're raised with sort of blind obedience in some ways where it's like, yeah, this is the way we do, this is the way we do things at my house. My friends do things differently. I will say when I got straight A's, I got, $10, which again is privileged to get any money for straight A's. Some of my friends used to get like $50 per A.
That's the hard part, that no matter what your parents do, there's always someone out there who's doing better. And I guess that's part of the lesson. My kid, he's 5 years old, incredible saver. He's at 30. He'll tell you to the penny how much he saved.
I love that.
But he'll also tell you that his friends have $100 bill. Like, oh, why do they get $100 bill from their parents? And thankfully, like you said, every family, I remember Howard Stern saying, every family is a cult. Like, you have your own vision of the world with and how everyone else is different. Maybe they're worse than you and whatever. You've got it harder, but also better. Anyway.
Yeah, no,
so
exactly.
In his mind, he accepted, hey, that's not, they're not learning how
they're
to
not
earn
you.
Money.
They're
and
not
I'm
us.
Teaching
they're
you.
Not, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you could even tell him, you could be like, look, you know, and this is what my dad would tell me when I said, look, my buddy, you know, so-and-so gets $50 per A on his report card. Why do I only get $10 for straight A's? And my dad says, well, that's because I expect you to get straight A's. And he's like, and then he's like, his parents clearly don't expect him to get an A. and that's what my dad would tell me.
Right. So, they don't think much of him. Oh, I'm totally going with that. You know what I have to tell you? There's a part of me that has wanted to do a set of interviews that is nothing but how to raise an entrepreneur with the parents of the people who I've interviewed, with the people who I've interviewed, talking nothing about the childhood of the entrepreneur, just to get a sense of what it's like. No sugarcoating. No, it has to be, you learn, you get contracts. It doesn't have to be what you had. It could be just, we let them do whatever they wanted. They climb trees. Turns out one day they were an entrepreneur. It could be what you said. But through all that, I feel like we're going to learn a few things we can bring back. And I just learned one thing that I could bring back. His parents don't expect much of him. They can't
It was a pride thing. It was like, this is what we expect of you. And so we know we're going to shell out $10 every quarter. And then it's like, his parents probably never think they're going to give him a single $50 bill. You know what I mean? And I like that. Like, cause it was like, when I was a kid, I remember thinking like, yeah, I guess it is easier for me to like work hard and get straight A's than it is for him to, you know, get an A or whatever. And it's not, and it wasn't special for him. It was special for me. So that was kind of cool. Yeah. But, man, parenting topics. I don't have any kids. I'm turning 30 this year, and look at me. I'm in a bathrobe drinking scotch at, you know, it's 6:20, so that's fair
enough.
That's
not bad. But I wish I could drink scotch. I'm going to be driving from here. actually, I got hard kombucha from a past guest. It was so good. Flying Embers. I'm totally opening that up. But
I got, yeah, sounds good.
I'm
going
to wait. You then, at some point, the company didn't work out. Were you with that company with... why am I like worried about mispronouncing it?
It's Revelar. It's a Revelar. Spanish word. Revelar, yeah.
What is it?
Yeah. Oh, it's Spanish. Revelar. It's to fly again. So it's about survivors of sexual assault taking flight again.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. Were you with them till the end?
I was. I got laid off at 1 p.m. on a Monday, September 25th, 2017. Terrible day, September 25th. My favorite baseball player died in 2016, Jose Fernandez. And it's the day I got laid off at 1 p.m. on a Monday with all my buddies the next year. So now it's September 20, actually. And then a year later, September 25th, 2018, I won first place at Denver Startup Week with Sheets and Giggles. So I guess it all kind of comes together at the end. But yeah, so I got laid off with my friends, and I had 3 hours to wrap up, 3 hours of partnerships. That was really difficult.
What do you mean by 3 hours of partnerships?
So basically I had 3 years of partnerships with, we were a nationwide retail. We were in, Target, Brookstone, HSN, QVC. I don't want to talk about it too much to get into too much detail. Cause there's always some, stuff that can stir up in terms of people that were involved and that sort of
thing. Plus I'm always more interested in the person I'm interviewing in your personal headspace and your personal life than I am in the company.
It was extremely formative for me. When you spend 3 years, and you know, the company was sold and it was accelerated sale and that sort of thing. But when you get laid off at 1 p.m. on a Monday with, you know, 15 of your really close friends and coworkers, I think we were 20 at that point, actually. And, you know, you had come so close to turning that corner, and it was a mission that you really believed in, and we had helped save lives. We had helped a lot of people. It's painful. I mean, the first thing we did was, by 4 p.m., I think we were all just wasted. So that was, that's kind of the first thing. You know, you get laid off at 1 p.m., that's what you do. And then, you know, later that night, I was telling my friends, I was like, I got this idea for a company. And I was at the Rockies game with them that night. Serendipitously, my favorite team, the Marlins, were in town. Giancarlo Stanton had 59 home runs. I thought for sure he was going to hit 60 that day. But in any case, you know, I kept telling my friends, I got this idea for this betting company. And I kept telling them, I was like, no, listen, it's like, it's a commodities market. It's highly fragmented. It's largely traditionally physical retail, not completely brought online yet. There's some big names in the space. I'm not very impressed with their content, like so on and so forth. And my friends were like, okay, man. Like they were like, okay, you let us know how that works out.
So, they weren't excited about it because?
It's not that they weren't excited about it. My friends are very encouraging, my former coworkers. In fact, my former team member, one of my good friends, Nick, he actually did my first photo shoot with me. He helped me get the company off the ground. He was a really fantastic guy. He couldn't join me full time, unfortunately, because he works at Google and he ain't giving up those benefits for startup benefits. But yeah, so basically, when you get laid off and you have a few drinks and you start telling people about a pun-based betting company that you want to start, people might look at you a little askance, and that's totally fine. And I think
but
I told
your
my
analysis
buddy,
made sense. Sorry, you told your buddy what?
No, it did. It did. My buddy Paul, shout out to Paul Foley. He ended up being one of my first investors. I love him. I told him about the idea about a week later, and I found that the company 3 weeks after getting laid off. So I was serious about this. I told my buddy Paul this. He's an investor, and Paul's response to me was like, "What the fuck are you talking about?" I was like,
I love good friends like that.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. I was like, you know, I just come from cars. You know, it was a wearable tech company. Like, it was new tech. It was pretty cool. It was, you know, we were in physical retail. Like, we were, you know, we were covered in TechCrunch and all this stuff. And then I was just going off about betting, and my friend Paul was like, "You've lost your mind." And I was like, "I'm going to do it." And he was like, "All right, well then I want to invest," because he knew me. So he wrote me one of my first $5,000 checks. And so basically what happened was
before we go deeper into it, let me take a moment to talk about my first sponsor, and then we're going to come back in. I want to know a little bit more about that decision making process. Which scotch is that, by the way?
It's really good. It's a Glen Scotia. It's a 16 year. It's fantastic. I go to Scotland once every 3 or 4 years with my dad. It's where he hails from. And we play a couple rounds and pick up a couple bottles. And it's a really fun father-son thing to do. We did it last year in May, right after Techstars. I got off the stage at Techstars April 24th, April 25th morning of, was on a plane to Scotland with my dad. So it was a nice little, you know, light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, I bet. That's such a good way to celebrate with your dad, too.
Yeah, it's great.
My first sponsor is a company called TopTal. Are you guys a remote team, by the way?
We're actually based in Denver, but we do have people in California and in Florida as well, in Fort Lauderdale.
I remember interviewing people like Heaton Shaw, saying, "Heaton, why do you hire from TopTal?" He said, "Well, they've got a matcher. You tell them what you're looking for, they get you that right person. Who else can do that for you?" I remember
I've seen TopTal's ads on YouTube. I'm a former recruiter, so I used to be a recruiter. I started my career at a hedge fund called Bridgewater Associates. I don't know if you know Bridgewater.
I got to ask you about Bridgewater. Yes, I heard that. I made a mental note to come back because I interviewed someone else from there, and he told me about the principles. But anyway. Yeah, so you were a recruiter. What did you know about TopTal?
I didn't know. So this is back in 2013 when I was a recruiter. So I don't think TopTal existed. But basically, the 90% of a recruiter's time. Now I feel like I'm doing an ad for TopTal. I'm doing an ad. Like your sponsor's got to have me on to talk about them. So basically, 90% of a recruiter's time, you're going to pay a recruiter 25-30% of somebody's starting salary, and 90% of that recruiter's time is going to be spent on sourcing candidates and screening them, and that's it. Like, that's where the manpower comes in. And so TopTal, from what I understand, is basically a automatic way to source and screen and pass you qualified applicants without having to spend any time on that. And so that's why they can do it at a much lower price.
Right. They've done it ahead of time. They've got their network. Yeah, all you have to do is talk to the matcher, and they go into their network and find you.
Exactly,
I talked to a bunch of entrepreneurs who I've interviewed, and they loved it. The one issue that people have had is, well, TopTal only does remote people. They're a remote first company. Mm-hmm. They're probably the biggest remote company that way. Mm-hmm. Actually, I shouldn't say that. I don't know. I've heard that and I want to substantiate it before I even bring it up. But they've always been big on it. And now I think people are finally starting to say, you know, maybe remote developers, if they're really good, makes sense. And so TopTal is all about that. Their speed, their cleverness, they will get you people who will blow your minds. And if not, don't hire them. All you have to do is go to toptal.com/mixergy. When you throw that /mixergy at the end, you will get 80 hours of TopTal developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours, in addition to a no risk trial period. I say it very fast. I'm going to say it again. Top is on top of your head. Tal is in talent. That's toptal.com/mixergy. toptal.com/mixergy.
That was a great ad. That was fantastic. Do you listen to the Dan Le Batard show by any chance on ESPN?
No. What does he do?
My favorite podcast. Exactly the same thing. In the middle of the show, they do the ads. It's very organic. Sometimes we'll talk to the guests about it. Sometimes we're doing bits while they're doing the ad. And it's great because the problem with, you know, podcast ads, right, is that you hit the fast forward button 4 times in a row, and then you basically lose that. We spent tens of thousands of dollars on podcast advertising, close to 100,000, I think. And you know, I know, as entertaining as our ads are, they're pre-roll, they're mid-roll, they're post-roll, they're very skippable. And so I like live reads the best.
I do too. You know, the other problem with it not being live read is it's so insensitive to the situation. I've had, I love listening to gadget podcasts as a relaxation thing, and they will sometimes rip on 5G and then they'll throw it to an ad and it's like, Verizon 5G will cure cancer. Verizon, I think, said they will help cure cancer with 5G.
Right.
So you clearly did your analysis, but at the same time, you were thinking to yourself, maybe no more startups for me. Right.
It was one or the other. It was so basically, when you get laid off and you lose your health care and you don't get your your last week's paycheck, you have to buy back your laptop before you leave the company. I took below market salary for, you know, 3 years working at this company. And you know, you're in your mid-20s and your buddies that I went to Emory University. All my buddies are bankers. I started my career at a hedge fund. You know, you see everybody accelerating in their career, making more and more money. And, you know, they trade off the hours for it and they put in the dues. But basically, it was like, all right, I used to live in Seattle. I had a great life in Seattle, great friends in Seattle. I'm either going to go work at Amazon. I was very interested in the Alexa team at the time. This is 2017, height of, you know, Alexa craziness and the amount of units they were shipping. I thought about applying for a few open roles. I had friends that worked there on the Alexa team, on different teams. And basically I was like, I'm going to apply for this. Or on the other end of the spectrum, I'm going to do something totally crazy and start my own company. For me, I'm going to be founder. I'm going to be CEO, and I won't have to rely on anybody else for good or bad decisions. It'll be entirely on my work ethic and my decision-making ability. And, there was nothing in between. I wasn't going to go work for somebody else's startup. Basically, it was just a now or never sort of thing. I was 27 years old. I had 3 years worth of fantastic connections from Techstars in the Boulder, Denver area. I had really amazing mentors that I knew would want to potentially back me and become my first investors. And you know, basically, it was like I said, now or never. Where like I could have gone to work for another company and then had another idea, but I had just gotten done scaling a wearable tech company, then a lot of physical retail, then a lot of Amazon channel marketing. When you look at competitive advantages, a lot of people in my peer group have no experience with physical products, mostly people in software companies. And so I knew that if I had my own product that was a 4.5-star or higher product, that was my own brand, that had a low complexity supply chain and a massive commodities market where I could differentiate the brand and the product versus everybody else out there, I knew that we could be successful. And so I sat down and I said, okay, if I'm going to start my own company, what do I want it to look like? And I literally wrote out my perfect business model. I had a sheet of paper and I wrote down massive commodities market, zero brand differentiation, zero brand loyalty, highly fragmented, no market leader that I have to chip away at, largely physical retail so I could bring it online with a direct-to-consumer model. And then the last piece was, you know, there was low complexity supply chain, no Bluetooth, no firmware, no software, and on staff. And then something that I could also crowdfund. And I also wanted something that was fun because I had just spent 3 years with a sexual assault prevention company. And while that was really fantastic, from a mission perspective, it was also exhausting. And so I basically looked at, and this is a true story, I looked at all the domains that I owned.
Before you get to why you did that, can you tell the alarm story?
Yeah.
This was amazing. Yeah.
So this is what inspired me is I have a mentor who's one of the co-founders at alarm.com, and she's a wonderful person. And I once asked her, I said, what inspired you to, you know, found alarm.com? And, you know, it's not, the only reason, but she basically said that this is back in, you know, mid 2000s. They looked at all the one word domain names they owned, and they owned alarm.com. And there's a lot more that went into it than this, obviously. But they owned alarm.com, and they said, this would be really a fantastic name for a home security company. And that was kind of one of the catalysts of starting what's now a, you know, massive home security company in the United States, worldwide. And so I was really inspired by that story and the power of a brand name and just the power that can be, you know, behind a brand name. And so, I looked at all the domains that I owned. I usually buy a domain whenever I think of a business idea. I own a lot of pun-based domains as well. And I owned sheetsgiggles.com. Because it's a funny name. It's a funny name for a bed sheets company. That's why I
owned
it.
You just thought one time, hey, maybe one day I might own a bedding company.
When you're geared, and I think all your listeners will agree with this, like when you're geared towards, you know, starting companies or being an entrepreneur or founder, like you are constantly thinking of new business ideas. You see something jogs something, just a joke or an offhanded comment or whatever it is. And I was watching War Dogs with Miles Teller. No joke. Have you ever seen that movie, Miles Teller and Jonah Hill?
I'm dying to see it. It's not on any platform that I know.
Good movie. And basically Miles Teller in the beginning of the movie, his character is selling bed sheets out of the back of a pickup to retirement communities. And he basically is trying to sell these for a high price. And the retirement communities are telling him, like, why the hell would I buy your bed sheets? You know, my people that live in my community, they don't care how nice their bed sheets are. They're here for five. They're, you know, a really callous statement. And, you know, I was with my ex-girlfriend. She's my ex for a reason because I'm fucking neurotic. And I was like, this is ridiculous. I was like, he didn't do any market research. He has no idea who his customer is. He did no pricing research. He has no idea what his value proposition is. You know what? Pause the movie. And I wrote a business plan for bed sheets company.
You literally did this?
That night, yeah, like in like June or May 2017.
What was in your business plan? And by the way, no wonder you're not dating her, okay? What was in your business plan?
Exactly. It was basically name of the company, brand value, brand promise, channels, points of differentiation, what I would want to do. It was about designs of the sheets and, like, you know, less so about the materials, and it's gonna be bamboo, you know, it was gonna be sustainable. That sort of thing. And so it was all these different things that were just pieces of the puzzle. I would only go direct on Amazon. I wouldn't do any physical retail because at that point we were knee deep in physical retail and I was not enjoying it. Basically that was the spark. Whenever I think of a company to start, I always ask myself, what's a funny name for blank? That's just kind of where I gravitate.
What's another example of a domain that you own?
Oh, sunglasseshalffull.com. I own workfromrome.com. I think that one is actually a really good one. Instead of work from home, work from Rome. Marketing rights itself, right? It'd be like anybody feel free to steal this idea listening. It's a really fantastic idea. It'd be like a remote year, if you guys know a remote year.
Yeah.
But for 1 month instead of 12 months and one city instead of 12 cities, you could charge a higher monthly price and specialize in one area instead of 12 different areas. So it's actually a really fantastic business model. And I own, what else do I own? My worst one I ever bought was instead of Wake Forest, I bought wakeboris.com and I tried to sell it to Duke and UNC. That was a waste of money.
So I went back into the internet archives to see what the site looked like. It looks like pretty early on, you got a Shopify store on there,
mm-hmm, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
With just, I don't know, silly, but almost their idea. It's like, unmatched comfort, unbeatable price, save the world, where you're going to donate, 100-day return policy.
Yeah, and then there's also unlimited return policy now.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
So it was
no arbitrary time limits.
All this stuff, but it wasn't really an idea then. It was just you tossing up a quick landing page to see what happens?
Yeah. No, basically, you're probably looking from like January 2018, if I had to guess.
That's pretty spot on.
Yeah. So
maybe off by a couple of weeks or so.
I love thinking about the site iterations that we've done. The site's been pretty static. I like to think we're actually doing a full rebuild right now. But Basically, yeah, January 2018, I sat down. This is 2 years ago. January 2nd, I sat down with my intern, Haley. Shout out to Haley. She's awesome. And I basically said, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do a crowdfunding campaign for this bedsheets company I started. And we're going to prove that people want sustainable bedsheets that are high quality at an affordable price, better than Brooklinen's, better than Boll & Branch's, better than Parachute's pricing. And we're going to do it on crowdfunding because, frankly, I don't think anybody's going to give me money for this pun-based betting company that I started. So we have to crowdfund it. Basically, when you're doing crowdfunding, there's a simple math to it. And I'm not sure if you've talked to people about crowdfunding math before. But basically, whatever your goal is, you want 30% of your goal on day one. So we had a $100,000 six-figure goal to prove the market demand for this. We had raised very little money. We had raised about $60,000 from friends and family, although I had promised them that I would not spend a dime of that until I validated the idea, and I would only spend my money until that point in time. We basically said, okay, we've got about 3 months ahead of launch on May 1st, where we're going to want to collect a certain amount of emails ahead of time. How many emails do we need to collect? So $100,000 goal, $30,000 on day one was what was necessary. We had a $70 average price that we knew, and if the average person ordered 1.5 units, then that basically meant that their average order value would be $100. And if you need $30,000 on day one with a $100 average order value, that's 300 customers, period. And if on a crowdfunding campaign, almost 100% of your day one customers are going to come from your email list, and an email list reasonably converts at 3%, 2% if you're doing something bad, 4% if you're doing something good, 1% if you're awful, 5% if you're amazing, then basically we need 10,000 emails in order to guarantee 300 customers on day one. And that's exactly what we did. We did 11,000 emails. We got those in 8 weeks.
How?
So we threw up that landing page. On
the one that I saw that offered free pizza and bedding.
Sheetsgiggles.com. We still give away 2 free pizzas every single week.
You messing around. That was like,
No. I literally will on the Domino's app order pizza for 2 customers every single week.
Okay.
I do it myself because it's fun. Any problems with the pizza delivery, I outsource that to my team. When I was starting this company, I was like, what are some ridiculous, zany things that like I've always wanted other companies to do for me? And I was like, well, companies have a lot of money. A lot of times VC companies have a lot of other people's money. 2 pizzas cost $16. Let's just start sending people pizza. And the thing about that is that it's so much more goodwill to buy somebody dinner that they can eat in bed and send you UGC for that pizza party they're having in bed than it is for sending them, like if I send them like a $15, $20 gift card to Amazon or something like that. It's like very tangible goodwill. So we did that. We got a lot of emails from that. People were signing up because we were giving away pizza every single week.
What else did you do to get people to sign up?
We were basically doing Facebook ads. We did like 50 different ad variants. We did like 8 different landing pages. We were testing headers, H1s, different images, different value props, different pricing, different calls to action. And we actually ended up capturing 45.4% of emails from visitors to our landing pages over those 8 weeks.
I saw that in my notes here. What did you do to get that?
So basically we built an extremely powerful brand almost immediately. In February 2018, the whole goal of the brand and the reason why we have the handwritten calligraphy for the logo, I did the logo the first thing I ever did in October of 2017 when I founded the company. Basically, I wanted people to see this company and immediately think that it was something they had never seen before, something that they had never heard of before in eucalyptus bedsheets, and something that they wanted to be a part of because of how much fun it looked like we were having. And I just wanted the people to smile because I have a firm belief that like people buy more things when they're happy. And I think that they'll actively avoid buying from you if they're not happy, like Comcast. I threw up a bunch of different landing pages. I used Kickoff Labs in order to build the landing pages, hooked into my Shopify and Google Analytics really easily, ran a bunch of different Facebook ad variants. We spent like $1,000 in a week with content that we had shot in February 2018. Like I was saying earlier, February 2018, that was our big, big launch photo shoot. Me and probably 12 of my friends. It was Super Bowl Sunday. I'll never forget that day. Tom Brady lost to the Philadelphia Eagles. It was fantastic. We were drinking whiskey. We were smoking cigars. It's Denver, so we were smoking some other stuff. And we were ordering pizza and having fun in bed. And we were doing ridiculous things. We brought in 2x4s into the bedroom with a circle saw. Then we had our models, my friend Virginia, who just had a baby actually, saw a 2x4 in half on camera while somebody slept in the background just for the bit sawing logs. That's it, like snoring. Like that's the only, like literally, like I had this bit in my head and I was like, we're going to saw literal logs in the bedroom. And everybody was like, all right. And I was like, and that's like, I like doing a central bit for a photo shoot. And that was the central bit for this one. That was the climax of the photo shoot.
I thought I thought what you were going for with that was it is so comfortable. It'll get you sleeping so soundly that even if somebody is sawing, you won't know that.
Multiple things, right? The eucalyptus wood connotations, sawing logs, chopping logs in terms of
what's the deal with eucalyptus? Well, what does eucalyptus do?
So basically,
why is that such a big deal?
It's very fast growing, matures in less than 10 years. Base wood that you can also branch instead of harvest. It grows back very quickly as well. It grows on non-arable land, so you don't have to use farmland for it. It uses up to 96% less water per bed sheet set compared to a cotton bed sheet set from seed to sale in its production. And it uses up to 30% less energy, no insecticides, no pesticides. Cotton by itself uses anywhere from 16 to 24% of the world's insecticides by itself as a crop, which is nuts. And so basically it's the most sustainable fabric in the world. And it's also, one of the most premium fabrics in the world. Everything that I'm sitting in, these bed sheets, this comforter that I have, this eye mask that we use with upcycled fabric from our factory so it doesn't go to waste. Everything is made out of eucalyptus lyocell. And so basically you take the wood, you put the wood into a solution, out comes pulp. The pulp's actually called dope. You turn that dried pulp into a fiber. It's like, it becomes a fluffy fiber. Like
I get how it's good for the environment.
It's fantastic.
What do I care for me? Like, what do I care whether it's eucalyptus, cotton, or rayon?
It's a better product. So cotton is what I would call a legacy product, right? So in software, you have legacy products all the time that get replaced by newer products. The thing about cotton is that even though it's a legacy product, it really hasn't been unseated by anything aside from maybe like a petroleum-based synthetic, like a polyester, because it's such a huge amount of production in the world every year that basically it it's Harvey. Sorry, he's getting in the way.
I see your dog right in front of the camera. Ready? It's good. Yeah. I can still hear you and see you.
We have his own website, by the way, sheetsgiggles.com/Harvey. And so basically, when we look at cotton, I think about legacy products that need to kind of go away. Now that being said, cotton's great for a lot of different things. It's extremely useful. It's had
to be. And then get back to me. Well, let's talk self-interest for me. If I sleep in eucalyptus, what happens? Am I sweating less? Am I happier in the morning?
Literally sweating less. So the best thing about eucalyptus lyocell is that it's actually temperature regulating. And I'm not blowing smoke. I'm not just making things up the way that some companies do in terms of their claims. Basically, what happens is that it's extremely moisture wicking. And so as you sweat, it's going to pull the sweat off of you immediately. And the thing about lyocell is that it's going to evenly distribute that water across the fabric over the course of the night and evaporate it into the air.
Okay. And lyocell, the reason before we got started, I kept saying eucalyptus sheets and you said, no, Andrew, make sure that you say lyocell. If you don't say lyocell, people are going to think that I am cheating them. And the reason is lyocell is man-made product, right?
Yes,
and so you want to be clear. Hey, look, I'm being lyocell, open about what's in here.
Basically, what I don't like is, the whole like bamboo thing. It's not bamboo, it's bamboo viscose, right? And when it comes to eucalyptus.
Wait, it's not? What's bamboo viscose?
So viscose is the first generation of what's called cellulosic rayon, which is rayon or fabric.
Oh, got it. So it's bamboo with this other thing. Got it.
Basically, it's the same exact process that we use, except bamboo is not as sustainable as eucalyptus as a base wood for the cellulosic rayon process, because you cannot reuse the solvents in a bamboo viscose.
Wait, now we're getting too deep in the woods. I get it. I care more about the business part of it. Like, who'd you get to make this thing for you? How did you get it over here to your specifications? Mm-hmm. What did you do else to grow your email list? Why don't we start with the email list since we're on it a little bit? You did this Reddit post a few years ago. What's a Reddit post and how did you get more signups because of it?
You got great pre-show research. So basically in February 2018, I used to be a recruiter. And one thing that I know is that people are hungry for resume formats and they're hungry for good resume content. And so basically February 2018, I sat down on my computer one Saturday and I wrote up this big long Reddit post on the job subreddit about how, you know, hey, I'm a former recruiter. One of the things that is very frustrating, sorry, it's my dog burrowing under the sheets. One of the things that's very frustrating for me is that, you know, the best resumes always come from Yale, Stanford, Harvard, MIT. And it's because they teach their students proper resume formatting. And very few schools actually do this or do this in a good way. And so I wanted to democratize these resume formats. And I started off the blog post with, why is a betting company writing about resume formats? Like, I'm sorry, did you want somebody to write about thread count for the 87,000th time? Like, just go Google why thread count doesn't matter. And so basically, it ended up becoming the largest, the top upvoted post of all time on the job subreddit. It's been viewed over 2 million times to date. I get emails about it every single day. We got about 1,000 email signups from that just organically with no spend. And what I love about that post so much, is that one, it's, you know, it's really good for our SEO, obviously having backlinks on a top Reddit post on a large subreddit. But also it's very important for, I think, our initial ethos in terms of like how, and I don't want to sound like a, you know, shitty D2C founder, like how we engage with our community. But like, you know, in terms of like how we treat people and the way that we treat people and the way that we expect to be treated back. Basically I get customers email me every single day and they say, hey, I want to let you know I got a job because of the resume format that you put on Reddit, and to celebrate, I just bought a set of your bed sheets with my first paycheck. And that is like the coolest connection that I have with people that know, I don't know how many CEOs have that type of personal connection with their customers.
And so this was you saying, I need to find a way to get traffic to my site. I can't write about thread count. I'm going to go on Reddit, write about the thing that people are asking about.
And the thing that I know,
that's going to come over, and it's not directly related, but everybody buys sheets, so you've got something.
The beautiful thing about sheets and giggles is that it literally is a pun off of shits and giggles, which means for no reason, just because, just for fun. And that has been so powerful for me from just a branding perspective to be able to do whatever we want, whenever we want. We were in the street off, I'm working from home, obviously, down below my apartment. We were in the street last Sunday on scooters and bikes. This is before the quarantine, 2 Sundays ago. Yep. On bikes and on scooters, wrapped in our new eucalyptus comforter, like taking scooters down the street, bikes down the street, wrapped in it. We were in the gym, bench pressing wrapped in the comforter, on the elliptical. Like no other betting company is able to do this because Brooklinen, Boll & Branch, Parachute, Bed Bath & Beyond, they've all staked their claim and built their brand on this like very almost unearned seriousness, this severity of we're selling like the best things you've ever touched. Our coefficient of friction from the lyocell is lower than cotton's coefficient of friction. Our sheets are more breathable. They're more moisture wicking.
But they are. Cooler, I see they're what better. They're trying to. But you're saying, look, they can't have fun with their stuff because
they
if can't. They're going to say this is the serious product,
they can't do it.
The only thing that they could do is have sexual innuendo in their ads, right?
It drives me crazy. What I used to do when I pitched the company, when I first started the company, especially at the Denver Startup Week pitch in 2018, which came with like a big, it was like $100,000, $95,000 check. It was awesome. I beat crypto startups. I beat AI startups. I beat B2B software startups with a bed sheets company. It was so much fun. It was like the month before we started shipping. And what I did was I pulled up 3 slides, and I did this in my Techstars pitch too. And it was Parachute, Brooklinen, and Boll & Branch. And I feel bad that I always pick on these people, but I really respect the companies they built. I'm just, you know what I mean? So basically, I pull up a slide and it's 3 other images, and I say, these are 3 of my main competitors, and these are 3 Instagram posts in the last month from 3 of my main competitors. And I would forgive you if you thought they were the same company. They've got the white sheets with the white walls. There's always a French press coffee placed ever so precariously on a white comforter, which is like a ridiculous place to put a French press coffee.
I'm such a jerk, by the way. I'm actually fact-checking this as you're talking to see if that really is what they do. I never heard of Parachute before, so I'm checking them out. Yeah, I see what you mean. It's a ceramic bowl that I see on Parachute.
There's a fern in the bedroom. There's always exposed brick. They're aspirational brands that frustrate me sometimes because they are they're aspirational in like a very niche sense. Like aspirational for me is being independent, being financially free, being having fun, doing what you like, being with the people that you love, being with your family, your friends, having fun experiences, and less so about the exposed brick studio in New York City for $4,500 a month. And I think that that's where a lot of my competitors and I differ in terms of like who we're talking to.
Okay. I want to come back and find out why Techstars even mattered to you. Why do you want to go back there? And then since we didn't talk yet about how you made the product, let's go into that too. But since you like my ads, I'm going to include you in my second ad also. It's for a company called HostGator. What's an idea that you've got for a new business that somebody could launch on HostGator? What would you suggest or an approach for finding a new business that they could launch and host on HostGator?
Well, I've got a few different things that I really want to start on the side. So I don't know if I want to go into anything in too much detail. I don't even know if I'm able to have the time to do some of these things. I really like the sunglasses market. I'm bored. The sunglasses market is like very bored. It's very commoditized. I think that's a really good one. I know for a fact the margins are fantastic. I own sunglasseshalffull.com. If anybody wants to steal it from me. Or if you can come up with a better name,
you know what I would take without taking one of your ideas. I would take your approach and apply it to HostGator. One of the things that I noticed about you is, I think you're hosting with GoDaddy, and as soon as you buy a domain, it just goes to the HostDaddy, the GoDaddy pages that basically sell whoever's on the site. I'm going and signing up for hosting with them. If somebody had a HostGator account through HostGator.com/Mixergy, they could buy domains. They have good prices at HostGator. It's basically not expensive to buy a domain.
No, it's actually, I think it's cheaper than GoDaddy, if I remember correctly.
It's super cheap. The thing that I like about HostGator is they'll give you, if you pick that baby plan, as they call it, they'll give you unlimited domains. So imagine you're with your girlfriend, Colin, going back a few years, your ex-girlfriend now, and you're sitting down and you're kissing her and you go, you know, it'd be great. Lipstick that actually tastes like vanilla. Right? So,
I do these bits all the time with my friends where we go into fake startup pitches. And the other day I was doing a Shark Tank pitch for my buddy John, and I was like rope.com. I was like, look, millennials don't know where to buy rope. No one buys rope. I said, I live in Denver. Where the hell can I buy rope? I don't know where to get rope. If I need a few bales of rope, like what do I do? Where do I go? And he does the Mark Cuban impression. He goes, Lowe's, Home Depot, Walmart, get the fuck out. So if rope.com is available, somebody can grab that.
Let's say the Uber for ropes, because who's got time to go to Lowe's? And in the new world, you can't leave the house.
Yeah. I love the D2C space so much.
Direct to consumer. I'm surprised you love it. I feel like people know.
Love it. I sarcastically, ironically, it's a cesspool.
Oh, yeah. It is. It's a cesspool of the, I wouldn't call it a cespool. Why do you think that it's a cesspool?
That's really derogatory. No, it's basically sound like such a prick. It's a lot of people that take themselves too seriously. What I love about Sheets and Giggles is that clearly I sell fucking bed sheets. Like they're sustainable. We've saved hundreds of thousands of years worth of drinking water. Untold amounts of pesticides and insecticides. We plant a tree for every single order. We just planted 20,000 trees last month. Like, it is the coolest thing in the world to me that I get to make an impact. We just donated, this coronavirus thing came around. We donated all of our extra inventory to Denver Rescue Mission because they need more bed sheets for their beds.
You have extra inventory? What do you mean extra inventory?
Aged inventory that's basically discontinued colors and that sort of thing that's sitting in the warehouse.
Got it. Let me go back to the whole skate
rack. No, but my point is that the DSC space is like people, it's like, and I don't want to talk about anybody in specific, but like, it's like, we're changing, personal hygiene. It's like, no, you sell a toothbrush online. It's like, we're changing the way that people travel. It's like, no, you sell suitcases. Like, it's not like, it's a little too highfalutin. I know so many entrepreneurs, Techstars, other people that are light years smarter than I am and that are building things that are world changing and just absolutely incredible.
And they don't
products.
Talk about their work in terms of changing lives as much as a toothbrush company does.
It's always the D2C company that has to have the mission that is the most aspirational goddamn thing you've ever heard in your life.
Why is that such a bad thing? I have to say, as an interviewer, I admire that what they're doing is they're communicating a feeling, and often they believe in it until there's some point where they become disillusioned and they're done.
Yeah. No, so yeah, until the unit metrics still make sense. But no, it's I object to it because I think that a lot of 23-year-olds buy into it. I think
you mean
that
as customers or as entrepreneurs?
No, as employees. So I think that a lot of 23 and 24-year-olds see a job posting for a DTC company, paying them $40,000 a year in a city that's not a livable wage. And they take the job and they work their ass off. They've got 0.1% equity in a company they have no ability to control the destiny of, and they have no say in the board, you know, the board meetings, the amounts raised, the exit potential. And then what these kids do is they work their ass off, they work under market value, they buy into the mission, and then they realize after 2 or 3 years that there is no mission for this company. They're a sales company. They sell widgets. They sell things. And there's nothing wrong with that. I love selling widgets. I love selling things. I love making our customers happy. I love interacting with other human beings and hearing people. We have people email us every day about their eczema, multiple sclerosis, contact dermatitis.
It goes away because of this?
That goes away because of the sheets. And they sleep through the night. And that makes me beyond happy. But I don't talk about that shit because it's not genuine. And I don't tell my employees to buy into it because I tell them that I pay them market rate and I love them and I love working with them and that's why they should work with me.
I forget which one of Jordan Belfort's books this was in, but after The Wolf of Wall Street, I had a baby. I needed to walk the baby through the city to just like calm the baby down. And I can't sit at home doing that. So I went and got a bunch of audiobooks and I'm listening to Jordan Belfort. And one of the things that he was doing was selling steak door to door, selling steak. And he had this whole gimmick where what he would do is he'd say, I got this truck. We can't sell the steak because there's a problem with the truck. I think something like that. Can I unload it to you, homeowner, at a reasonable price? Because I can't sell it and it's going to go bad anyway. And the homeowner's like, I got a deal here, and they buy it. And so he goes to his partner and he says, why are we doing this for this other company? We should do this for ourselves. And the partner like is so listening to Jordan Belfort talk up how great this steak is, how it's going to change your life and your health because it's specific cuts of meat done in a specific way, that his partner says to him, but where do we get the good meat like that? And he goes, holy crap, this guy's been buying our BS for so long that he doesn't think he could ever get away from this. And it's like, wow, I forget how BS is something that you could buy into your own BS to that point.
You can't believe your own press. It's like drinking poison. And I think that's also where a lot of founders go.
But I feel like I should be doing that too. Like, how many entrepreneurs who are doing essentially podcasting, creating online courses, are basically saying we are changing everyone's lives and talking in high-flying voice?
And you do, there are, like, the thing is that, like, I don't want to come across as holier than thou, although I probably already have. But it's more of like, I think that you can change people's lives. I think the resume post I made on Reddit, hundreds of people have emailed me saying they got a job because of that resume post. And that is literally life-changing. Like, in the sense of like getting somebody a meaningful, high-paying job changes their lives, their family's lives, gets them healthcare. It's the best feeling in the world. That's why I love being a recruiter. But like the thing is that like at the end of the day, we are not curing diseases. We are not curing cancer. We are not going into space. And we are making a meaningful contribution into the sustainability space. But it is, at the end of the day, we sell bed sheets. And that's what I love about it, is that it's a blank canvas to do whatever the hell we
got
want.
Got it. And then you get to put your personality into it. And this is the thing. All right, let me come back and close out the ad. This is still part of an ad.
It's still an ad?
It's pretty good, though, that we talked for this long really because – We gave ourselves a little bit of space from their competitor's name, which I threw out. Actually, I'm not the kind of person who wants to play those games. The competitor was GoDaddy. Here's the thing. That's funny. You go to hostgator.com/MixerG, you pick the baby plan anytime. This is going back to the kiss with your girlfriend. You have a business idea. You have an idea for a new site. If you have the baby plan, you buy a domain, but also one-click install, throw up a WordPress site on there, and now you're really creating something, even if it's just the goofiest landing page, because only you and your girlfriend will see it, and it'll be a way of saying, hey, look, baby, sorry that I got away from the kiss with this idea, but how funny is this? You show something for what you've done instead of just have the domain. Boom, go out to hostgator.com/MixerG and change your life and the lives of everybody on the planet by having a brand new set of websites. This will be a greater world. If only 1% of people who are listening to this will do that, this will be an absolutely better world.
Rope.com.
If you could go get rope.com, rope by delivery.
This is my favorite interview I've ever done. I hope it's coming off as well. I feel like I've come off as a bit of a douchebag, but
I feel like one of the things that's happening to me is I am I get off story sometimes with my guests because I enjoy the conversation so much.
Yeah, same.
It's like even my next guest is coming in here. This is maybe my last. No, who is that? That's just Jeremy. I don't know who Jeremy is. So, oh, did I say 6 o'clock or 6:30 to the guest? I'm basically going to be here all freaking day because knows when is the next time that I'm going to be able to record out of my office. And I said 6:30. So I'm here recording. I'm basically going to be locked out of this office after today. So I might as well enjoy myself. If I wasn't driving home, I would be having a scotch right now to just really say, Andrew, this is not bad. This is like a start of something fun and meaningful. Anyway, what I was starting to say was I'm enjoying my conversation so much lately that I sometimes get off story, and I wonder if someone who's listening to me could tell me how that comes across, because I could see as a listener sometimes it's fun to get the fun personalities of the people who are talking.
I like this stuff. Yeah, this is much better than like a very rote, you know, like how do you do this or why do you do that or whatever it is. I mean, there's elements of it too within it. I think that's why I'm liking it so much.
That's what I'm going for.
And now we're doing the meta, breaking the fourth wall, talking about the interview itself.
I do that all the time too. I can't help it. I'll do an ad and then I'll say, hey, you're a salesman. What do you think? How did I do?
Man, no, this is great. But yeah,
let's come back to how you got the betting. Where'd you go? How'd you get it done?
Well, so basically there was something in New York. It just got canceled this upcoming week. It's called Market Week, Home Textiles Market Week. And by the way, if it's getting progressively darker in here, it's because the sun is
setting. I noticed that it's getting
Denver. Yeah,
more romantic, drinking whiskey. Well,
I can do really startup cliche. Alexa, lights on. Fantastic. Oh God, that's
a lot of light. I'm glad you got Alexa.
I love
Alexa.
Oh, she's.
I shouldn't
the best.
Say the word out loud. Anyway,
no, but so basically, it's something called Home Textiles Market Week. And so it's every year, it's twice a year. And so basically I had enlisted the help of a gentleman named Mike Pearl, who's a good, now my director of product, my director of operations. He was a connection that I had via my investors out here in Denver and my mentors. And basically Mike helped me with, you know, getting introductions to different people that could help me design tech packs that could help me figure out how to bring my ideas from my company to life. I was working with a few other contractors who helped me broker some meetings with some manufacturers that were coming into town from all over the world. It was a 4-day conference, met with tons and tons of manufacturers, you know, including some from America. Unfortunately, nobody from America had the expertise to manufacture the specific material that I wanted, but the eucalyptus lyocell for the sustainability and premium purposes. And so America doesn't really do textiles anymore, unfortunately, although we are opening up an Alabama factory this Q4, which I'm really thrilled about. And so basically I met a bunch of different people, talked to them about their ethics, their manufacturing practices, you know, their ability for output, pricing, the whole thing. And I felt really, really good about one of the people that I was speaking with. And I signed a pillowcase at the end of the week for my first contract. And that was how we got started. And
pillowcase first, and then
it's customary to sign a pillowcase. So
oh, you actually signed
the pillowcase.
Oh,
yes.
Got it.
Yeah. I've got a great.
That's in the betting industry how it works.
Yeah. So I signed a pillowcase, and we basically our first purchase order. And this is back in March 2018. So at this point in time, we had been running Facebook ads to our landing pages ahead of the crowdfund for about 3 or 4 weeks. So I knew at this point we were collecting emails at like a 40% conversion clip. And I knew what our cost, you could extrapolate out your cost of acquisition from there. You can extrapolate out your net margin. And so basically I knew that we were going to have a big crowdfund, and I just, for this industry, it's commodity products. So if you're going to get somebody to stop their presses for you and for your designs and for your colors and for your products, and your tech packs, you're basically going to have to guarantee hundreds of thousands of dollars of product. And that's what we did. We signed a PO for several hundred thousand dollars, which was extremely terrifying. But I did that only after I knew, running the numbers, what our day one was going to be on the crowdfund. And I almost nailed it to a T. I anticipated about 40K. We did 45K on day one, ended up doing $284,000 crowdfunded over the course of that campaign. And actually ended up being the largest Indiegogo crowdfund ever for the betting category. And it was bigger than Brooklinen's. Brooklinen did 236,000. So very competitive person. Sometimes.
Why'd you pick Indiegogo over Kickstarter?
That's a great question. There were several different things. I think most specifically, I had done an Indiegogo the year prior with Revelar. So I was familiar with the platform and I learned a lot. I had like a big journal that I had written on Penzu about things that we did wrong on Indiegogo and you know, what I would do differently a second time around. And I got the opportunity about 1 year later to do it a second time around for my own company. And we had a 20-person team at Revelar on the Indiegogo and we did 151K. And I had a 2-person team at Sheets and Giggles and we did 284K crowdfunded. So it's really all about preparation and experience and execution. And I'm actually writing a crowdfunding guide right now that I want to put out there for other people to be able to follow.
Why Techstars? Techstars invests in companies.
In tech companies.
Yeah, right. Good point.
Yeah, you could ask David Cohen that too. I think he'd probably agree with you.
Why did you go to them? Why did they see in
I
you?
I love David Cohen, by the way.
Me too.
No, he's, do you know Dave?
I do from the interviews. And then there was one interview that a friend of ours asked me to interview him in person. And I felt like he was just angry with me all of a sudden.
No. He's very introverted. Is that what it is? So you and I clearly are very extroverted. And
yes.
Dave, God bless him. I love David Cohen. I love David Brown, the two founders of Techstars. David Cohen is a big time introvert. And so every time I talk to David Cohen, and this is, I'm not the only person that said this, I genuinely am like, don't think David likes me. And I'm like one of his portfolio companies. So like, it's just,
you know what? That makes sense. I've heard that of other people too. And I just didn't think about it because when we're online, everything's great. But then I remember I said, you look great. He goes, yeah, I lost a lot of weight. I go, I didn't mean you were fat before. And this is the way I heard it in my ears.
That's a really good impression. I love Dave. I love Techstars. I owe my entire career to Techstars. I was 24 years old.
What did you get? Let's be specific. What did you learn from them?
So basically I had out of college, I started my career at Bridgewater Associates in Connecticut. I got fired in 5 months. I became a recruiter. I hired myself at one of my clients in Seattle. And so in 3 years out of school, I had 4 jobs. And if you looked at my resume, it was like, okay, this kid went to Emory University, went to work at Bridgewater, got fired very quickly, like has had a couple other jobs in the meantime. They're totally different industries, totally different functions. What's the deal with this person? And so when my friend Jackie with Revelar got the opportunity in 2015 for Techstars, I jumped at it because it was a company that I had helped found. I had written the business plan for, I had been involved in very intimately from day one. And so I basically saw this as a way to, you know, restart my career. And I asked my boss at the time, I said, can I drive down to Boulder for this program? And to his credit, he said, look, man, like this is a once in a lifetime type of opportunity. Ended up being twice in a lifetime. And he was like, you got to do it. And so I hopped in my car and drove down. And that was the mentorship that I got, I cannot overstate.
Is there something specific that you got that helped shape either company?
Everything. So there were in summer 2015, I lived in Boulder, Colorado. And my two lead mentors, one of them was the VP of global sales at a company called Spiro in Boulder. I don't know if you know Spiro. They make the remote control droids with your smartphone.
I interviewed the founder. I didn't hear that it was Spiro. Oh. Yeah, I interviewed the founder. They're Techstars company too.
David introduced me to them. Was it Paul or Ian or who?
I forget at this point.
So Spiro, their VP of global sales, a guy named Joe. He was my lead mentor. He's fantastic. He's actually starting his own company, the Great American Cheese Company. Shout out to Joe. And it's the best cheese he ever had. And so basically Joe had 15 years retail experience, taught me every single thing I knew about how to sell into physical retail, contract negotiations, terms that are important to physical retailers, how to merchandise, how to get set up in a store, how to sell through, how to manage buyers. And it was just such an incredible education that I can never repay. And then some of my other mentors were people from HomeAdvisor, people from Techstars, people from really other fantastic companies. This last time around, folks from Craftsy were mentors of mine and from other really great companies. And one of my mentors from 2015, two out of the three of them have become my first investors into Sheets and Giggles. And it's because they're like, this is the thing that I think people, I rant about this sometimes with, you know, free market capitalism and meritocracy and that sort of thing. I work like a dog. I'm going to work more tonight, 7:15 PM. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to do more stuff. I'm going to take two more videos. I'm going to, you know, type up more emails and type up some business plans for my company that we agreed on today in the wake of this virus thing. And you know, I basically feel like I've earned a lot of what I've got. That being said, if my friend Jackie doesn't make the phone call to me, tell me we get in Techstars, which she really worked her ass off for, I don't get those mentors. Those mentors don't know me personally. They don't become investors into Sheets and Giggles, and my company never gets off the ground. And so it's also a matter of who you know, how you know them, what they think about you, of course, and then, you know, where you're able to take that and what you're able to do with that opportunity. And so it was really the education I got from people in the community. And that's what Techstars is really, really fantastic about, is bringing people into the community, into the room that are experts on different things, and just taking you to school on customer experience, user experience design, you know, everything I think about, our packaging from the ground up, our logo, our brand voice, our channels, our channel strategy, that all comes from my experience with my last Techstars company and how that works into S&G. And now actually we just have a 2.5 year mark at S&G. So I've officially been at S&G as long as I was at Revelar before I founded the company.
Sheets and Giggles. I can't believe you don't always say it, that you actually,
I know, I have to say S&G because otherwise I laugh. So I have to say, so it's, yeah. Yeah.
But Bridgewater, real quick, what do you remember about the experience there? That is created by, why am I blanking on his name?
Ray Dalio.
Ray Dalio, one of the richest people in the world, wrote the book, The Principles, about how you should codify what you believe and how you operate and then keep iterating it. You got the principles when you worked there, right? That big book?
Yeah. A lot of people listen to this podcast, right?
Let's say not that many to at this point. We're going to have, go ahead, be open.
There's a lot of good people that work at Bridgewater. In fact, there's a lot of some of the smartest people I ever met in my life at Bridgewater. You know that old saying, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room? I was never the smartest person in the room at Bridgewater. They are really gifted people. That being said, I got fired in 5 months because I just couldn't exist in the culture that they had built there. I would encourage people to read Glassdoor reviews so they know I'm not just, you know, being bitter. They have 200 and something principles that you're supposed to operate by. And inside of Bridgewater, people would talk. This is back in 2012, 2013, so I don't know what it is currently. But people would talk like, hey, you're violating principle number 75. And then somebody would say, no, I'm following principle 114. You are violating principle 162. And this is how people would interact with each other. And so when you codify your culture and you have these rules that are very rigid in some ways and sometimes contradictory ways, and you put 1,300 people in the same building in a petri dish following those rules, it's just not what you expect, or maybe it is what you'd expect. It ends up being almost like a dystopian. Dystopian is too strong of a word.
You're describing a religious cult where I could say, but this section of the Bible. Say that basically what you're saying is it becomes the Bible of the company, and the problem with the Bible is there's room for interpretation, multiple
interpretations
that could
you know, the Bridgewater's research is unparalleled. I mean, they've made a really good name for themselves, really fantastic company. If you had to tell somebody that they had ketchup on their face, you would tell them, hey, you have a little bit of ketchup on your face right here. And you would tell them that because they're your friend and you don't want them to look like an idiot. And that's how Bridgewater describes being honest with people, and that feedback and that transparency, and not telling somebody something because you're going to hurt their feelings. That's how they describe it. The reality of it is, oh my God, you fucking idiot. Look at yourself. All over your face. You clearly have never looked in a mirror before. You don't know what anybody else sees on you. You got to clean that ketchup out of your face right fucking now. Look at you, you goddamn asshole. And that is like, and it's it's funny to like describe it that way in hindsight, because when I was there, I just was so uncomfortable. I didn't fit in. And I just, you know, I got like go quickly. And, you know, they tell you something different about me. They tell you that I didn't fit into the culture. And to their credit, they, you know, they have a fantastic alumni network. People reach out to me, other Bridgewater alums that are, you know, entrepreneurs and, you know, the people that are high up at Bridgewater reach out to me, and we have a good relationship with people there. And it's just not for everybody. Like, and it's clearly been very successful for them. But it just wasn't something that I could exist in.
I interviewed another founder who had the opposite experience, TK Cater. He is the founder of Tout App. People should go to my site and search for Tout App or TK. His experience was he got those, I guess it was photocopied at the time, the guidebook.
Yeah.
And also baseball cards on people, but.
Yeah, yeah. The photocopy. I had the principles in a photocopy, but also they gave you a lockdown iPad, and every meeting you would take a iPad survey of who followed the principles the most during the meeting.
Oh, wow. Okay. So his experience was, this is amazing because it's all so systemized. I guess I wonder if he might come at it from like a programmer point of view, where he's fascinated by how people were programmed. But I think seeing this alternative point of view.
They told me my greatest weakness was my empathy.
A way to turn that into your strength. Right. How angry are you that you don't have sheetsandgiggles.com?
Furious. Furious. Oh. Yeah. Furious.
At least it's not being used for anything. And now you keep like registering your trademark, letting people know it's a registered trademark. There's no way that.
Yeah. Yeah. We're aggressive with that. When we see, there was a board game called Sheets and Giggles. They seem like nice people. We don't really have coverage for that. But yeah, I mean, I would love to have sheetsandgiggles.com. That being said, that night in June 2017, when I watched War Dogs, I got sheetsgiggles.com. I got at sheetsgiggles everywhere.
Oh.
So I wasn't the first person to think of the pun. So the domain was taken. Some of the social handles were taken. Not on everything, but some of them were. Whereas sheetsgiggles, which is just the brand name without the ampersand, it was available everywhere. And so that's what I jumped on. I also own like sheets.vip, jacksheets.com, ecofriendlysheets.com, eucalyptussheets.com. They all redirect to my website.
Of course you do. Boy, your dog's name Harvey, right?
Yeah, he's right here.
Dude, looks really good on camera. I like the way that I always loved when my dog, when I had my dog, just would face forward almost like he's a... Yeah, like he's a model.
He's extremely photogenic. He's also extremely malleable. I can kind of just...
Yeah, he looks like he's wondering what you're doing right now. Yeah,
exactly. he's a very good boy. I love him. He's getting me through this semi-quarantine.
Oof.
He's biting my finger right now. He's a good boy. He's half Jack Russell, half Dachshund. It's the quietest dog you ever meet in your life. But he's such a good model, and I love him. And I just don't know, honestly, what I would do without him. He's also very cheap retainer. So he's our main
model. I see him on, I'm flipping through your Instagram now and I see him on there.
All right,
for anyone who wants to go check out the website, it is a fun website. It's a fun company. You can see them at sheetsgiggles.com. I cannot review the sheets. I'm not a sheet reviewer, but well, I can review the company. I can get it. I feel very guilty when people send me gifts. But I will tell you, I did go to Amazon and just look at the reviews. Every time we're talking, I search everything. Oh, I just lost the name of the founder of Sphero who I interviewed. I even like checked myself. Sphero. Who did I interviewed the founder, Paul
Bavarian. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Bavarian. Yeah. Yeah. This was back in, wow, it's like 10 years ago at this point.
Paul's helped me with some things. He's in Boulder. He's great. Boulder, Colorado, by the way, extremely tight knit tech community. You know, and you're sorry, I actually never answered your question why Techstars was interested in the bed sheets company in the first place. I remember I sat down with somebody from Techstars when we were we had just won Denver Startup Week 2018. We were revenue positive, we were very lean, I was the only full time employee. We were doing, I think October, November 2018, we did like close to six figures. It was like, I think November was like 90K. It's like our second month in sales. And I asked, I was sitting with the Techstars folks and they were like, yeah, you know, Colin, usually companies come in that are, you know, not revenue positive, not profitable, that have, you know, that don't really have a product or that aren't in market yet. And I was kind of like sitting there like eating my food and I was like, don't you think it might be good to have one of those in the class? And you know, they meant it in a better way than I'm making it sound, like, you know, they help people go from zero to one. But it was really funny to hear them say that in those exact words. And so basically I was a known entity. I had been through the 2015 program. The MDs of Techstars Boulder knew me, they knew who I was, they knew how hard I worked, they knew the type of person I was. And I think that it also comes with, you know, having somebody who's a little seasoned on stage and with the community of investors and with the people in the class. And, you know, a lot of times when things got tough and it's a pressure cooker environment, right? 10 companies, 13 weeks, one room. It's intense. And I think that having somebody who had been through a program before also is appealing to them, because I could, you know, kind of guide people through it a little bit. And truth be told, we ended up raising the most money out of anybody in our class.
I like how competitive you are about it.
You know, and I love that. I'll always love that. I'll love, you know, the whole, why is a bed sheets company in Techstars? I'll love that until the day I die. Like, that's the funniest thing in the world to me. And so I think that was also kind of funny to them, to be totally honest. And Techstars Boulder has more flexibility with who they take into the program. We went right on demo day. We went right after Atomos, which is a spaceship company. They make nuclear reactors to bring things from lower Earth orbit to geosynchronous orbit. Unbelievable. Smartest people I know in Techstars class. I went on right after them and I told Natty, the MD of Techstars Boulder, I fucking told him, I was like, do not put me on after Atomos. And he thought it was the funniest thing in the goddamn world to put the bed sheets company on after the space company.
Probably appropriate. You know, like, for anyone who feels like, well, this is a little unattainable and hard to wrap your head around, this comes in and helps. All right. Thank you so much for being here. It's sheetsgiggles.com. I want to thank my two sponsors who made this interview happen. The first, if you're loving this and you want to go get in on this, go to hostgator.com/Mixergy and start your website. Of course, if you hate your hosting company or you're spending too much, good time to cut back and get really good service. hostgator.com/Mixergy. And finally, if you're hiring a developer, we have talked so much about this, go get a good price. Great developers from toptal.com/Mixergy. Thank you so much for being here.